Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron. I'm sorry, what? What was that?
I've lost my falsetto, so I'm struggling with those high notes.
That happened during surgery?
No, actually, I lost about a note and a half when Sidney Crosby scored that overtime goal in 2010.
I remember that. I was in Mexico, and there was a bunch of Americans and a bunch of Canadians watching the game.
Ooh, how awkward was that?
No, it was fine. It was hilarious. Everyone was chirping everybody, and I was sitting down, ignoring it all. And for some reason, when we won, and when I say we, I mean Canada.
Yeah, not you personally.
All of the American dudes came over and put a shot of tequila in front of me. I hadn't said a word to these guys.
Maybe that's why they wanted to appreciate your respect for their, I don't know, whatever.
Dude, 12 shots.
Wow. Maybe I should put on just another tequila sunrise right now for you, though.
Hey, it's time to talk about love. Speaking of drinking, Dr. Omri Gilath is
drinking in the love.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Okay, yes.
We're going to chat with love gurus during each Saturday show in February. And got a bunch of very interesting love gurus coming up. Quite excited about that. And we're also interviewing couples who've been married for 50 plus years, and they are going to be interviewed right after this interview with Dr. Omri Gilath. By the way, Dr. Gilath, sir, I'd like to just get you on the phone right away because you're a pretty entertaining dude, but I just realized that am I actually pronouncing your name right?
No.
Wow.
Love the honesty.
Wow. How do you pronounce your name?
Omri Gilath.
Oh, wow. Thanks. That's okay. Say it like a white dude. What do you say?
I can't. Think about maybe Henri or Ombre. Maybe that would help you.
No. You know what we're going with? I've decided. This is
it. All right.
He's the OG. He's the Dr. OG.
Oh, Dr. Yeah. OG. He's the OG of love.
The OG gangster.
There it is.
There you go.
OG of love.
Tim, I want to talk to Tim for a second. Tim, you remember when he was on the show last time?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Totally, yeah.
We thought he was going to be just another stiff,
dry
academic dude that we would be able to go to the bathroom, have a break, and he'd still be talking, right? But he was hilarious.
Trey's hilarious.
So listen, here's the thing, and I do want to be serious about this just for a second. You can't talk about Love Month with a couple of meatheads like Tim and I and not eventually talk about the, what's it called, sex. Not talk about sex. And so if you've got kids
and
you don't want kids to know anything like that at all, then go away. Don't listen. That's what radio is all about. Turn it off. Just go away right now. Okay? There's your disclaimer. Dr. OG. Listen, man.
OG.
That's him being worried about where we're going with this conversation. OG. Porn. You have just done some interesting studies about porn. And I would like to know... Tim, don't play Barry White while we're talking about porn, please.
Oh, it's kind of got that. Yeah.
Oh, man. What are these studies?
So you know, the issue of porn has many negative connotations and associations to it. People tend to worry that, you know, watching porn can do all kinds of bad things to you, you know, and this is not even just something that is happening today. It's been around since, you know, the Victorian era, kind of like people were worried that if you're watching sexual images or if you're masturbating, you know, that's gonna negatively affect you. You can get blind or go crazy or you know, even die. So we have these very negative kind of attitudes. Unfortunately, this is true not just for, you know, people out there, but also people in academia. So we see that you know, some of the research on pornography and pornography consumption has the same kind of biases. But we're trying to look into that and see, A, what happens when we are exposing people to sexual images. How is that affecting them? Are they, for example, more likely or less likely to engage in infidelity? You know, this is something that I just wrote about in my recent blog, so I won't talk about that in a second. But more recently, we're looking at the reasons for why people watch porn. Now, you can tell me, oh, you know, this is obvious. There's like one reason and one only, because they want to, you know, get some gratification out of it. Turns out that there are many, many different reasons. So that's something fascinating for us.
Okay, so I want to tell you what I think about porn, and then I want you to tell me what your research says about what I think about porn. You ready?
Okay.
Okay. It was once explained to me this way, and then I realized, oh, yeah, it's probably true. Porn ultimately has the potential to make men impotent, because you're training your brain to get turned on by images on a screen and fantasies and no actual interactions, and eventually that will have an impact on you sexually. True or false?
False. And you know, this is a great question, by the way.
Thank you.
And for example, there are studies showing that if you expose guys to porn, if you show them the same porn movie, for example, same clip again, it would negatively affect them. So, for example, their sperm count is going down. Now, these studies are part of the Coolidge effect. I don't know if you know the Coolidge effect. Have you ever heard about it?
No. Like Rita Coolidge?
You know, we used to have so the President Coolidge, and the story goes that, you know, him and his wife went on this farm tour, and as they go on the tour, they get to the hen house, and they were separated in the tour. You know, there were some folks walking with the president, some different folks walking with his wife, and you know, the wife is getting to the hen house, and they explain to her what's going on. They say, you know, that the cock here is so great, it can do, you know, it can have sex 100 times a night. She said, oh my God, this is amazing. You got to tell it to the president when he shows up. So they say, fine, and then the president shows up, and they tell him that, and he says, but is it with the same hand? And he said, no, this is with a different one. Every time, he said, tell that to my wife. Right? So the whole concept of the... You're supposed to laugh now. The whole concept of the Coolidge effect is that we appreciate novelty. Right?
Yeah.
From an evolutionary perspective,
yes,
we are looking for novelty. So anything that is boring for us is going to be less exciting. Right, so to an extent, what's the potential truth that underlies what you said is that, you know, if we are exposed to things, you know, again and again and again, you develop some kind of habituation. This is not necessarily leading to impotence, but it can reduce, you know, your excitement about this specific type of media.
So it's like the law of diminishing returns.
Not exactly, but in a way. The idea is that, you know, our body is geared or hardwired to react to novelty. And this is, by the way, true not just when it comes to sex. This is true also when it comes to danger. We are, you know, we kind of like looking around us or sensing the environment. And whenever something is introducing a chance of danger or a chance for you know, reproduction, we are more likely to pay attention to it.
Well, hold on. Ultimately, in these conversations, I want relationships to be healthy and to last. And
okay.
I think a healthy relationship lasts, right? Ultimately, that's what I think is what I'd like to have happen in all these things.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So here's the thing. So when we looked at the reasons for watching porn, right? So, you know, we did it in two different steps. The first step was just to ask you know, people out there, what are their reasons, right? This is a stage where you kind of approach people and say, tell me about your reasons. You go, we had about 162, if I remember correctly,
hypothetically,
to begin with, and then we basically did what we called in psych, in statistics factor analysis, and we looked at what are the main ones out of these 160 that, you know, the main types. And we kind of came up with four of them. So within that, you have what we call social-emotional reasons. So these are reasons that, you know, to deal, for example, with your emotions. So you're basically using porn as a way to regulate your emotions. So maybe you're sad or you're angry or you're lonely, and you're using porn as a way to connect.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad thing in a way, right? There are other reasons, for example, that people are using porn to extend themselves, right? So they're learning new things, and they're using it as a foreplay. They're watching it with their partner, and it's kind of helping them to get into the mood. So these are actually good reasons in a way, because it's likely to positively impact the relationship. So again, it's a mixed bag, if you may.
Yeah. In the Jesus world, Jesus said something that was interesting, and I'd like to know. Well, hold on. Let's see how this ties in. I got to remember what Jesus said. He said something like, "Hey, you've heard it said, don't have sex with women who aren't someone who's not your spouse." And I'm saying, don't even think about doing it. So don't even entertain those thoughts. Okay. So and the reason that he said that was because I would imagine. Listen to me, knowing about all about Jesus' reasons. I would imagine that he would know, or if there is a creator, that the creator would know that if you don't take control of your thoughts will take control of you. What do you think?
Yeah, so you know, without getting into Jesus or not Jesus, this is representing the Christianity, you know, kind of approach to some extent to sex. And this is, again, the attempt of some religions to constrain these thoughts and actions, right? So this is what I said, you know, especially in the Victorian era where you know, people were you know, using all kinds of devices, like, you know, chastity belts or other devices to prevent people from masturbate. So in the same way, you're trying to prevent it, right? So if you think about the sexual ed that we have today, right? Let's take it there, and you think about abstinence, right? So teaching kids not to engage in that, not to think about it, not to learn about it, right? If you focus on that, research suggests and shows that there are three negative outcomes of that. A, it doesn't work, and unfortunately, if you take the states here in the U.S. where this is the main form of sex ed, you see more teenager pregnancy and you know, more STDs and so on. So not that it's not helpful, it's actually, you know, damaging. The second thing is it's stigmatizing. So it's putting, you know, kids in the slide that if you're having sex and you're not supposed to, that's putting you in a kind of like a stigmatized group. And the third thing is creating very, you know, a kind of like a black hole, because you're not bringing in the science-based approaches to sex ed, and you're not talking about contraception, and you're not talking about you know, STDs, and so the health outcomes are bad, right? So in a way, I, you know, especially as someone who's studying subconscious processes, so I have studies on you know, when I use priming and I expose people to very quick kind of images, we're surrounded by sexual images and stimuli and stuff like that all the time. And there was a study done a few years ago where they interviewed 4,000 people and said, in the last 5 minutes, right, did you have any kind of sexual thoughts or fantasies or anything like that? And about, you know, 5 out of 10 guys said yes, and 4 out of 10 women said yes. And this is in the last 5 minutes. So if you take in the last 24 hours, we all have these thoughts to some extent, whether we are, you know, willing to admit that or not. So I think that you know, working very hard to try and suppress it or not to think about it is actually going to have this kind of like a white bear effect. Are you familiar with the idea of the studies of the white bear, where you tell the participants, don't think about white bears, whatever you do, and then you let them write an essay, and they start, you know, writing about white bears. So it can actually come back and haunt you, because you're trying so hard to not think about it that you'll start thinking about it more and more.
It's also an episode from The Simpsons, right, Tim?
Don't say revenge. Yeah. Don't say revenge.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm out of here.
Exactly.
Okay, Tim, my buddy here, wants to say something.
Yeah, it's. I think it may be connected in some way to something you had just said. North America, well, the Victorian era was known for being uptight, especially about sex and sexuality. North America tends to be very uptight about it as well.
Americans are the most.
Specifically, yes. Now, what about, like, let's say Australia, you know, women are topless on the beaches. You know, Europe tends to be a little bit more open about sexuality and
sex.
You have
the same question every time we talk
about this. Are they less wound up about pornography?
Because the example is, when they drink casually as children in the Italian culture, there are less alcoholics in Italy?
Yeah. Wow. No, I'm just wondering if porn is as a big deal in some of these countries as it is here. Because for them, I guess sex and sexuality isn't pushed down, but
taboo.
It's sort of there.
Right. Dr. OG?
OG. So there is even in Europe, there are you know, people who are having what we call a positive approach and a negative approach to porn. So the fact that they're Europeans doesn't mean, for example, that they're not Catholic or highly, you know, religious and so on. So I would be, you know, careful to generalize. But yeah, in places or in cultural settings where people are not as uptight about that, it's not such a big deal. It's not a problem, and the consequences are. Now, again, don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't want this bit about porn to take away from, you know, women trafficking and sex, you know, abuse and stuff like that. There are many things about porn that are horrible, right? That people are taking advantage of.
I have interviewed ex-porn stars, and they're not necessarily pleased about the impact being in the porn industry had in their lives. So there are huge issues here, obviously. And hold on, let me just go off on one more tangent. Dr. OG, would you not say that for example, coming up in the studio next are Tim's parents. And the reason they're on the show is because they've been married for over 50 years. Now, back in the day when porn wasn't as accessible as it is now and wasn't as extreme as it is now, wasn't as whatever else you want to put in there as it is now, it just didn't seem like sexuality had a hold of people the way it does now. Am I delusional?
So a few things. First of all, congrats to his parents. My parents, by the way, are also going to have their 50th anniversary coming up soon. So this is a great day. And as a relationship researcher, this is great that people in our days can last that long. I wish the best for all of us. Now, the example of you know, what happens when you have excessive, you know, porn, take it with food, right? So you know, we evolved back in the savannah where we had to hunt or to gather, right? It was very hard to get food, so we ate whatever we could. If we found a big source of food, we would, you know, consume it quickly and completely. These days, when you can get, you know, you can go to your, you know, favorite burger store or the supermarket or whatever and get tons of food with high levels of sugar and fat and so on, people are still eating a lot, and that ends up with obesity and all these kind of things. So it's not that the food is bad, right? You wouldn't say food is bad, but you would say excessive, you know, consumption of food is bad, right? So I think that you're right, and I talked about it in the blog. I say, you know, back in the, you know, when I was a teenager, right, if we wanted to go and see porn, right, we had to go, you know, I remember as a teenager, my friend would go an hour in a train to a different city and go to a specific kind of like adult theater and sit there with a bunch of strangers and, you know, talking about. That was a big deal. That was a day trip and an adventure. Today, you know, two clicks and you're exposed to everything and anything that you want or don't want.
Yeah, yeah.
And that creates all kinds of problems, especially since the age of exposure to porn is so old, you know. So we're talking about kids at the age of 11 already being exposed on average to hardcore porn.
Yeah, okay, hold on. So here's the thing. You live in this world where it's cerebral and there's studies and there's research and all that kind of stuff. But, dude, anecdotally, when I break it down, I do not want my children, and they're older now, watching any porn. And it sounds like your studies would say things like, oh, you know, it's not that bad, and just relax, and it's, you know, societal, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, when it comes down to my own personal story, I don't want my kids watching porn. Am I a loser for that?
Right. So no, it's totally not a loser, and I'm with you there. It's not about that. What you should do is talk to them about that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Talk to them about porn.
Right. So you're saying the other extreme of the whole neurotic religious folks sticking their thumbs in their ears, going la 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 la. That's not helpful either.
Right.
Got it.
Right. Right. Exactly.
This has been a very uncomfortable conversation.
That's why I turned my mic off.
You should. I mean, and the fact that you send the kids away is actually, I think, a bad thing. They should sit here and listen to. So
no, hold on. I said that because of the station that I'm on, right? I'm on a station that has faith-based stuff. It's a Christian station, and I don't need people writing in hate mail anymore, and I don't need management up in my grill. And so I say that because, you know, it's a safety thing and, you know, and families, trigger warning, but families listen to this station and all of a sudden they're listening to my, first of all, no children should ever listen to my show, ever. Just want to throw that out there. But they're sitting there with the family listening to, you know, and it's on in the background and all of a sudden we're talking about this stuff. They'd be like, well, what's going on? I thought this was a Christian station. See, in their minds, Christian station means... you know, kumbaya stuff 24/7, and that's not our show.
No, Christian is also sex and reproduction. You gotta engage in that. You know, if you know, one of the issues that we have these days is that less and less people are having sex. So, despite the fact that we have all this access to porn, and despite all these, you know, Tinder and Grindr and what have you, we have less people having sex and less people having kids. So we have a real problem. We have a problem where you know.
Well, hold on. How do you know less people are having sex? Like, you have that. You have the numbers on that.
There are actually surveys that are done every year on, you know, how many people are having sex and so on. It just, you know, if you Google it, you'll find, you know, a handful of them just from this year showing that less and less people are having sex. Which is kind of crazy, right? But what you hear from people, you know, especially, you know, kind of teenagers and young adults and stuff like that, is that sex is messy and sex is and I don't want to meet and you know, instead I would rather play, you know, Fortnite on my Xbox or what have you. So,
gee whiz, wow,
kids are so different these days.
Yeah.
Pac-Man, making out, that wasn't a hard choice for me.
No, yeah. This is so interesting. And again, this is why I have you on the show, because you're such a great communicator and a straight shooter, and the information that you have is backed up by research. And just because people don't agree with some of the moral direction behind some of the stuff you say, well, then what should be the response? Should they stick their fingers in their ears and go la 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 la, or should they listen to what you're saying, process it, filter it through their own code, which is what we all should do anyway, and then go, all right, how do I feel about it, as opposed to freaking out and anyway.
And as an educator, you know, I want people out there to listen, to learn, to figure out what's good for them. If you're afraid from something, if you're afraid from porn, if you're worried about what it might do to you or your kids, and you're you know, sticking your fingers in your ears and singing la la la, right? That can be a problem, and that would lead to often the opposite of what you want to happen. We gotta have open communication. We gotta have parents talking to their kids. We gotta have partners talking to each other. You know, I like that. I don't like that. You know, do more of this or more of that. Communication is so important in close relationships.
Really well said, man. Really, really well said. This is why you were our first love guru for the month of February, the love month, on the Drew Marshall Show. Many more love gurus coming up over the month, but Dr. OG is the guy that we wanted to start with. He's an attachment theory expert. We're going to talk lots about that. There's actually something going to be happening in March, I believe, the first time ever on radio that this sort of thing will happen. I can't tell you any more than that because it's not official yet, but it has to do with attachment theory and relationships. What's that? Professor of psychology at the University of Kansas. The website you want to check out for this gentleman, and by the way, great stuff here. Great stuff. GILLAB KU.edu. Now you're not.
Oh yeah. No, you're good. You're good. Sorry.
So, what are you stepping on my promo of you, dude? Come on.
No.
So, and you're not going to remember any of that. So go to drewmarshall.ca, look under today's show, look for this guy's information, click on his link. That's the best way to do it. So good to talk to you, man. I really, really appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
All right, take care. Bye.
Rock talk.
Yep.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Did he say rock talk?
I have no idea.
He's got a great TEDx talk out there you should check out. Very good communicator.